sleep.
Hello, girls and gays.
Hola.
Welcome to Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
And we're back for episode 8 of this season. It's really flying by. Hey, Logan.
Yes, Sammy.
What are you more terrified of? Ghosts or phantoms?
Wow. Honestly, this is a trick question because I embrace the paranormal. I fucking love ghosts. I kind of have had a couple paranormal encounters myself. But if I had to choose which is scarier, I think phantoms are scarier.
I agree, especially if it's like a choice between the ghost of your dead fiance and a mysterious magic man haunting an opera. Anyway.
Yeah, so I agree. When you put it that way.
It's an easy choice. I guess I kind of gave everything away, but welcome to Rate, Debate, Recreate. If this is your first episode... basically, each week, Logan and I pick a show based on a category. We rate that show on a scale of 1 to 10, we debate which one is better, and then we think of one aspect that we might change and recreate it, and use that term as loosely or as rigidly as possible. So this week, the category is Spooky Ookie, and my show is The Phantom of the Opera.
And my show is Ghost the Musical.
Excellent. All right, shall we get started with some summarizations?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so I'll go first with Phantom summary, I guess. I mean, if you don't know, The Phantom of the Opera is a 1986 musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber. You know him, you love him, and actually I wanted to say who, like, oh my god, stop, go away. Sorry, it's my dog trying to jump on me, everything's fine. The Phantom of the Opera is a 1986 musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber. He does the music, the lyrics are Charles Hart. The libretto is also by Andrew Lloyd Webber and a guy named Richard Stilgo. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I don't know. But basically, it revolves around an opera company and a beautiful chorus girl named Christine, who becomes the object of obsession of a mysterious magic man who calls himself the Phantom of the Opera. And I didn't say this. It's based on a 1910 novel by Gaston Leroux. I don't speak French, but there you go. At the start of the show, the opera company has this prima donna named Carlotta, and she gets all the roles, all the big roles. Throughout the story, you basically see the Phantom, like, trying to sabotage everything and blackmailing the company with things like destruction and death if Christine doesn't get all the lead roles. Yeah, so the new owners of the opera who you meet at the beginning, they're, like, coming in for the first time. They're kind of like, fuck this. And Christine's childhood friend, Raoul, shows up in the beginning, and they sort of rekindle their flame, which pisses the Phantom off because he is very creepily in love with her. And at some point, the Phantom's demands and the hanging of people just gets to be too much. So the opera company, along with Christine, kind of hatch this plan to try and catch him. But he ends up, the Phantom, kidnapping Christine and taking her down to his lair beneath the opera. And then he makes her choose between marrying him and Raoul dying. So Christine chooses marrying the Phantom, but he's just, like, so blown away by her tenderness and capacity for love that he just ends up letting them go and then he disappears. So I don't even really want to rate this show. I don't know what to say. So I'm not going to, and I'll talk about it more in depth because I just don't know what to give it. But it's like a meh out of an E6, which is the highest note Christine sings in the titular song. So that's what I got.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you for that summary and non-score. Okay. Ghost the Musical. Ghost the Musical is based off of the movie Ghost, starring Patrick Swayze.
I love. And
Who else is in it? I
Demi
don't know.
Moore.
Demi Moore, yeah. I've never seen the movie, actually. I should. I just didn't have time to. But it's based off of that movie. And I guess for a little bit of context before I go into the summary, this is the first time, I think, or one of the first times where we have not found any online versions of the show to watch. So in preparation for this, I sent Sammy like a few clips of just like standout songs that I like. And I think we both just read up on the plot and listened through the album. I have seen a bootleg of this show like three or 4 years ago. So it's not like super heavily ingrained in my memory, but I do know the general gist of the show. So the gist is that boyfriend and girlfriend Molly and Sam move into Brooklyn together. They're like a young couple in love with this other friend, Carl, who they kind of look like a tight trio of a group. Basically, eventually one day Sam and Molly get mugged, and instead of like running away, Sam fights back and ends up getting killed in the altercation. But instead of moving on to the afterlife, he stays as a ghost because homeboy has some unfinished business. So basically the rest of of the show is like Molly dealing with that. And then you also find out that Carl, that it wasn't like a random mugging, but like it was more intentional, although the killing wasn't meant to happen. And that Carl, their third friend, was involved in all of this. Molly goes to a like psychic, isn't really the right word, but
That's kind of right.
supernatural paranormal, yeah, psychic person. And she like has these signs that Sam is still there and trying to reach and contact her. But ultimately, the rest of this is kind of like Molly coming to term with Sam's death and Sam coming to term with his own death and like stopping holding on as this ghost. Yeah, that's the general premise. I'm gonna give Ghost the Musical 6.5 out of 10 Rita Millers. Rita Miller is like the code name of the bank account that they're trying to wire Sam's money into. So one of my favorite songs from the show is Suspended Disbelief slash I Had a Life. And it's like a 10-minute song, and one of the like little bits they go through is like coordinating the wiring of money. And I don't know what it is, but that part I literally have memorized it so well. They like do the bank account number. They're like the account Rita Miller, and it's I don't know. I think it's so good. So that's what my rating system is.
Okay, I think I'm gonna disappoint you. Again, I only listen to the music and watch some stuff. I'm gonna have to give this, like, based on totally the music, like probably a 4 out of 10 Rita Millers.
That's fair.
There are some standouts, but I thought it was really disjointed. It didn't really have like a sound. It was like
Yeah.
drawing from a bunch of different genres, but not in a way that really coagulated or made sense. It was like this genre, then this one, then this one. And also, I couldn't get over this. Like one of the first, I think it's the first song, Here Right Now, sounds just like Give Me Everything Tonight by Pitbull and Ne-Yo. Like,
What?
it was, no.
Wait, how?
Logan, it has the
Here Right
exact
Now is like,
same. It has.
here right now.
Give
That
me.
one?
It has the same chord progression. You can sing Give Me Everything Tonight over it. Especially when it goes, Here Right Now, Here Right Now. Da, da, na, 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 na. Yeah, it's like, For All We Know, We Might Not Get Tomorrow. It's the same song. I promise you. Listen to it. It's the same song. And that's.
Oh, fair.
When are you gonna rate Phantom?
I also don't want to rate Phantom, but okay, here's a rating I will give it, which is maybe not, it's a rating of me maybe eating my own words, because I think I talk a lot on this show about how sometimes people just hate shows to hate shows, like Wicked, we talked about that, and but actually it's just popular. I think that I fell into that category. I used to trash talk Phantom a lot.
I mean, that's
Here's the
fair.
thing. I don't think it's a perfect show, but I watched it and was like, I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to. So just for that rating, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 E6s. I think this show is really interesting and the plot is bizarre. So like I think there's arguments that it maybe doesn't deserve an 8, but just in terms of enjoyability and like what I thought and versus what I got, I'm going to give it an 8.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. Part of me wants to give it like a 0 and part of me wants to give it a 10. So I don't know. Like,
Yeah,
it's
I
so
understand
weird.
that.
But I guess let's get started with some discussion. And weirdly, speaking of how that song sounds like Give Me Everything Tonight, which like I swear to God, go listen to it, it does. Phantom has weirdly had a lot of like plagiarism lawsuits. So
Oh, I did not know
yeah,
that.
there's a whole section on the Wikipedia page. So they all basically happened in the 80s, I think. But so the first one was filed by Puccini's heirs, like the opera guy, Puccini. And basically, they said that Music of the Night sounds a lot like an aria from this Puccini opera called La Fanciulla del West. I don't know how to say that. I'm very sorry. But they settled out of court. So that was the first one. There's another one. A Baltimore songwriter called Ray Rep filed suit alleging that the title song, The Phantom of the Opera, was based on a song he wrote called Till You. And I didn't listen to that song to see if there's like a connection, but Andrew Lloyd Webber basically came back and was like, no, that can't be true because I actually plagiarized myself, and that song is based on Close Every Door from Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. And
That feels like a very
Andrew
Andrew
Lloyd
Lloyd
Webber thing
Webber
to do. Yeah,
response.
and that suit was ruled in Andrew Lloyd Webber's favor. And then the other one, and I did actually listen to the song, and I think they kind of have a point. So Pink Floyd bassist Roger Waters claimed that the chord progression from the Phantom of the Opera song was plagiarized from the bass line of a Pink Floyd song called Echoes. But they didn't take any legal action, and he basically said life's too long to bother with suing Andrew fucking Lloyd Webber. So, but I think they actually got at a point. And you know, like maybe it's not on purpose, who knows? But to get a little serious, my truth is I like this musical,
Yes.
but I don't understand. I think it has like
Yes.
zero depth to it at all. And like, and I think a lot of what how I why I like it so much stems from nostalgia. It's probably one of the first things I ever heard growing up, and my dad really loves it. He's a big Andrew Lloyd Webber guy. And he used to like chase us around the house playing don 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 don. And it was very scary. So I think there's like a little part of me that is kind of attached to the nostalgia of it. And I would say overall, I am like definitely more of a Sondheim gal. And I feel like that's the person who gets like put up in opposition to him, Andrew Lloyd Webber, that is. But I mean, I'm also like kind of into this. Like, it's just spectacle for spectacle's sake. And I really liked the Royal Albert Hall version, which is the version we watched. You can watch it. It has Sierra Boggess, who is the Phantom? Ramin Kemerlou, and a guy named Hadley something who plays Rao, who's like super hot. It's really good. But so I really like that version because it's staged like exactly in the way everything needs to be staged because it's a massive venue. So the chandelier is massive. There are like 70 people on stage at all times. People coming up from the audience, people like running across the rafters. The costumes are wild. And I can't tell you like how many crappy versions of Phantom I've seen over the years because again, my dad loved it. So he'd take us to go see it. And like realistically, you can't just make it balls to the wall, grandiose every single time. It's just not feasibly possible in a lot of places. So like I saw Phantom at the Fox in Atlanta. This is the one I remember when I was in high school. Way too small of a stage. Couldn't understand a fucking word anyone was saying. We were in the balcony. Could not understand a word. The people I was with had no idea what was going on. And then there's the movie with the Joel Schumacher movie
Movie.
with Gerard Butler and Emmy Rossum and Patrick Wilson. My love, Patrick Wilson. But the movie only has, and it's a Joel Schumacher movie, so I'm a little disappointed. I feel like it only really has like hints of what's just be like over the top and so out of the stratosphere, but only like a little bit. And they're mostly from Minnie Driver, who plays Carlotta, and she's like the fucking best. But yeah, I think this musical is like the perfect example of look at me, but it has absolutely like nothing to say about anything, or at least nothing good. I mean, we can talk about like the incel aspect of this a little bit.
Oh my god.
Which, like, maybe we should, because I was reading the Wikipedia, and apparently Andrew Lloyd Webber was like, I really want to make something romantic. Like, he said he was, like, really looking to write, like, a true blue romance. And he had, like, was thinking about Phantom, and the more he dug into it, he was like, this is it. This is the romantic story of our lifetime. And, like, absolutely nothing romantic happens. And, I don't know. Besides, and it's just, like, not a romantic story. And I will acquiesce that, like, I love, love, love this musical as a child, because when you watch this when you're, like, 12, you're like, oh, shit, like, Christine looks like she's having an orgasm every 5 seconds. And she does. Watch Music of the Night, she literally does. And the Phantom is, like, moving his hands all over her neck and not, like, really touching her, but almost touching her. And you're kind of like, wait, is this sexy? And, like, maybe it still is in a weird way, but this is, like, the love story. If it's a love story, it's, like, a sad boy who's like, nobody likes me, the world showed no compassion to me. And also, I'm not saying there's no room to, like, explore that feeling, but also, Andrew Lloyd Webber makes all these people so surface level, like, why do I care about anyone, like, beyond, like, oh, pretty, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And then that kind of leads me to, like, this weird obsession that, I mean, horror, I think, has it now, just, like, in general, and it's always had it, but, like, French literature had, like, a weird obsession with, like, deformity as a sign of evil or, like, pity. Like, Hunchback, Beauty and the Beast, this. And I was kind of reading a horror blog that went into it. It was talking about, I mean, like, deformity is used a lot in horror as a trope, and it's, like, a pretty lazy one, I would think, at this point. Like, using, like, the quote-unquote, like, evil disabled person. Like, we don't need to, like, keep doing that anymore. I think we've moved past that. And in Phantom, I do think it's, like, possible to argue it's used as a way to, like, his deformity is used as a way for the public to dismiss his talent and ability. Like, he's a magic man. I'm really not sure where his magic comes from, but apparently he can make fireballs and compel people with his voice. So he has some kind of talent. And, like, that's why he is the way he is, and why Christine's tenderness affects him so much. But, like, it's just such a trope at this point. I don't know. I, like, would like to, like, read more into it in regards to, like, musicals and, like, this type of story in particular, where it's, like, a man in love with a woman who's deformed. Maybe I will before an episode that's coming up. I'll read a little more into that, because I think for this one I just kind of looked at the horror trope, and I think it's a pretty lazy trope to use in horror, but I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that? It's really, I was like, really, my mind was just like bouncing all over the place watching this, which is funny because it literally has no depth to it whatsoever.
Yeah, okay, here's my take, which is that, like, I agree with the whole, like, disfigurement as being equated with evil, being a trope we just, like, don't need. I will say, like, for the time it was made, and y'all know how I feel about time it was made excuses, but I really do think that for the time it was made, the society that existed did put a lot of, like, really bad emphasis on disability as, like, being a horrible, awful thing. Mm-hmm. And part of me is, like, I think part of this, how this manifests in Phantom, is that he has internalized so much of this hatred from the world that he does become evil. And one thing I actually do like about this show is, like, at the end, Christine is like, hey, dude, like, I don't hate you because your face is fucked up. I hate you because I think you're evil.
Yeah.
Like, and really makes that distinction. And I think he has this moment of, like, oh, she sees me in the way that the world doesn't. So, like, I understand the device or, like, what it serves in the show. And I also agree that, like, I'm just over that trope now. Like, mm-hmm. We can have other ones.
No, and that's what I kind of agree with you. And I think, like, I don't know, because it's, like, such a trope. And I wish it wasn't used in such a surface level musical, if that makes sense. Like, I wish, like, he actually took more time to dive into it. Like, if you're going to do it, like, knowing that it is such a big deal in this, like, genre of, like, horror, you know? I just wish it wasn't such a surface-level interaction. And also, regarding Christine, she does say that at the end. She also flinches away from him, can't look at his face, like, multiple times throughout the show. Like, this isn't, like, an Esmeralda Quasimodo situation where Esmeralda, like, never had an issue with it, right? Like, Christine definitely is like, ugh, like, half the time.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
hard.
I think it's, that's like, fair. I think that, yeah. like, in to sum up my thoughts about Phantom, I totally agree. Like, I think it's just kind of dumb. I don't think the plot is that good or well thought out. And, like, I'm the kind of person who can go see something and, like, I just am blown away by the wow factor of this show, and that's enough for me, you know, like, so, like, do I think that, like, if I'm being really critical and thinking about it on a, does this make sense, like, scale, the answer for me is no, and it's not that good, but if I'm coming at it from, like, an entertainment value, this show is just phenomenal. It's, like, out of this world grandiosity and lavishness in the costuming, in the stakes, in the music, in the staging, and the, like, the orchestrations of it all. Like, it's just so grand. And I also just, like, kind of think that that is Andrew Lloyd Webber's style. Yeah. Like, I don't think that he's, like, this playwright. I think that he is this, like, mastermind musician, like, music person, and, like, making things feel so over the top and grand. And then just kind of, like, puts a story to that. And I honestly think the story just comes last in his thought process. I don't know if that's true or not.
He's like, sorry, how big of a chandelier? Listening. How big of a chandelier can we get? Can we make it flash? Like, I'll build a story around it. Can we get people on roller skates? Like, cool. I'll build a story.
I feel that's what it is.
Yeah. I kind of agree. Sorry to that man. Sorry to Andrew Lloyd Webber, if he's listening.
Sorry to this man. D.K. Palmer.
Yeah. I think that's my... Yeah, I just think this is a ridiculous movie, but if you give it, like you said, like, the appropriate grandiosity, like, the room, the literal size of the room that it needs to be effective, and I think, like, if the actors do as well. I think in the Royal Albert Hall version, like, the actors appropriately give it, like, the wah! And, like, extra quality and kind of pizzazz and grandiosity that it deserves. Like I said, Sierra Bogus looks like she's just straight up, like, orgasming on stage the whole time. And everyone kind of has that feeling a little bit. Yeah, like, you'll have a fine time at the theater. And, like, we don't need to defend this thing. It is, like, literally one of the most popular things in the world. Like, it doesn't need us to, like, fight for it. You know what I mean?
That's very true.
Anyway, that's how I feel about Phantom. I had a good time.
I also would love to talk about Sierra Bogus.
Oh, is that how you say her name? Did I mispronounce it? I've always said Bogus. Is it Bogus?
Girl, you know how many times I've been wrong on this pod. So
I have
not,
no idea.
We are not trusting.
Sorry to Sierra.
These facts. I, like, to me, she is just inseparable. Oh, my God. Sorry. Oh, my God. This is, like, a big moment happening outside. So, I moved into this new place, and we have a backyard. I'm sorry, everyone. You're just getting this story.
No, give it. Background.
And so, we share it with one other apartment. And we've been here for, like, 2.5 weeks now and have not seen them once. And I think that they just went outside, and my boyfriend's out there, so they're meeting.
Oh, wow. You have to let us know how it goes. Now we need an update.
I know. I hope it goes well. I, like, want to be friends with them. Okay, anyway, Sierra Bogus, whatever her name is, like, she is just inseparable to me from the role of Christine.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that's incredible about that is I think that there are a lot of roles that you can say that for. Like, I don't think that's an uncommon thing. But one thing I think is uncommon about Sierra is she did not originate this role.
No. Sarah Brightman.
Phantom has been on... Yeah, Sarah Brightman did. This show has been on forever, but she came in as a Christine and, like, instantly became Andrew Lloyd Webber's favorite to the point where he basically wrote Love Never Dies, like, for
her. I know, which, like,
is something I read.
Yikes. But okay.
Like, we won't talk about Love Never Dies. If you don't know, Love Never Dies is, like, the Phantom or the sequel to Phantom. I've never even seen it, but I just have heard it's kind of whack. But Sierra, I mean, it was written, like, kind of for Sierra.
Are we surprised it's kind of whack? Like, Phantom is kind of whack. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's Fair point, yeah. Fair point.
No, I completely agree. She's, like, super inseparable. Almost, and I guess you should say, like, Michael Crawford, who is the original Phantom, yeah. He is also inseparable for me. But mostly because, like, I watched a couple old videos of him. You guys should watch these. Like, he, and Ramin was great. Like, I think he was great. But Michael Crawford has, like, a physicality that is, like, this is how I describe Patrick Swayze once. He moves like a jungle cat, but also kind of like the cats in the movie Cats. He's like very slinky, and he could compel me, though I have to say. He's also like an incredible singer, just like absolutely out of this world, but that's all I gotta say.
Yeah, what an interesting show. Speaking of interesting shows, move on to Ghost?
Yeah, we should. Let's go.
Okay, so Ghost is really interesting. Here's the thing. I kind of feel a little similarly as I do about Phantom. Not in the same way, but, like, in the way that, like, I don't think Ghost is that good as a musical. And I do think that I would watch it in a theater and leave happy. Like, I don't think it's a bad show. I just don't think it's, like, that memorable and has, like, that much pizzazz to it, which is why I gave it a 6.5 to represent, like, it's better, like, I'd rather see it than nothing, but...
What a compliment!
Like, all I have to say is I wouldn't leave the theater and be like, I wish I didn't see that.
Sure.
Like, I think it's good, but I just don't think the show itself is that, like, nothing really stands out about it. I think the music, it has its ups and downs. It's kind of a when it slaps situation. Like, mm-hmm. With You, I think all of Oda Mae's songs are really great. I actually like Here Right Now, despite the Pitbull similarities.
I'm telling you.
but what, like, the pièce de résistance of the show for me is the end of Act 1, Suspend My Disbelief / I Had a Life. It's this 10-minute song that is, like, basic. It's so much goes on, but it ends in the last 2 minutes or so with the trio of Molly, Sam, and Carl singing over each other, and it's this beautiful trio, and... It's like one of the most beautiful pieces for me. Like, I listen to it on the regular. It's heavily in the rotation for me. And I think that Casey Levy, Will Swenson, who plays Carl, and who plays Sam? Richard Fleischman, I think is his name. I think that their voices meld together so well, too. It's just a phenomenal song.
I was going to say, I think, like, even though I did not enjoy really listening to the cast recording, they all stood out as, like, extremely talented, so.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they do have the talent.
Yes.
But yeah, the music, I agree. I think that, like, honestly, outside of those, like, what, 5 or 6 songs they listed, the rest is kind of just forgettable. Mm-hmm. Not really something I go back to a lot. I also feel like the storyline, it's kind of eh. I mean, I know it's based off the movie, so I don't know to what extent it deviates from that, but... I do think that the second act definitely feels like it drags on quite a bit. Yeah, I just think that's the truth. Okay, the big thing I want to talk about, though, with this show that I think, I don't know if you're familiar with it, so it might be interesting to talk about with you as someone who hasn't actually seen it. I think one thing that it tried to go really hard on, which is, like, also a big spectacle for this show, but not in the grandiosity way that it did with Phantom, but this show came out in 2012, and it really heavily used, like, screen projection, like, video things, almost like in an IMAX way, it heavily in the background. It got pretty mixed reviews on that specific component. Some things said it did it really well. Others were more skeptical of how it performed. It also, I think, one thing that made it, like, soured the taste of a lot of critics is that at the beginning of its run, it had a couple moments where it had pretty big tech difficulties, sure. Including one where they had to literally stop the show for 30 minutes
on
a night that I don't remember if it was New York Times, but on a night that a big critic was there viewing the show. So, like, that definitely, I'm sure, contributed. I thought it was really cool when I saw it.
Okay.
I don't know if and one reason I think it might have gotten mixed critiques is because... I don't think that this style of showing that kind of, like, projection background as, like, the set in a musical was common at all when this came out. And I tried to research this to see, like, what show kind of started it, and, like, wasn't really able to find anything. But I can't think of many, if any, shows that like that was their primary like set prior to Ghost in 2012. And I do think it's a lot more common now. Like we
Yeah.
see it in Mean Girls, Dear Evan Hansen, the new West Side Story revival. Like it's a really common way to tell the story. I do think it's been leveled up. Like I don't think that Ghost has done it the best, but I do think that there's maybe a case to be made that like it was one of the first. And I think it does a good job of using that in the background.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. You might be right. I wonder, we should like look more into if that like started a thing. I don't know if it did, but
Yeah, so I tried. I mean, I think one problem was that like, how do you even search that? Like, I literally was like musical theater, like with projection backgrounds or like
yeah.
stuff like that. But in a lot of the reviews that I read, it did talk about how unique and like just characteristic to Ghost that set and like way of telling the story was, which is kind of what led me down that rabbit hole of like, was this one of the first? So audience, please feel free to correct me if you can think of other ones where it was like more common, but I do think that it should be given some credit there because I think that's a really like it, I think it's a really popularized thing now to where it's a lot more common. The biggest, I think, being Dear Evan Hansen, which
Yeah.
won Best Musical in 2017.
Yeah. I agree. I was gonna say, so listening through the cast recording, I think, and again, I've actually never seen the movie either, and it's a big like blind spot for me in my Patrick Swayze filmography because I adore him. But so I don't know if this is the thing in the movie. I assume it is. The tension between Sam and Molly when he's alive, based on the cast recording, seems to be he has trouble saying I love you, and like he always says ditto
Yes,
when she
it's
says
kind
it
of
back.
weird.
It is so weird. And not that I don't want to like, I think there could be plenty of reasons why someone may have trouble like voicing that emotion, but shows you in other ways, right? Like I'm sure that happens, and that's fine. Like you express your love how you want to. But I think the issue with it is like they have a whole song about it. I forget what it's called, but it's like towards the beginning, Three Little Words, I think. And
Right, it's like right before he
right
dies,
before he dies. And
too.
it's like she's like, we should get married, and he like can't even say I love you. But it's just weird to me because I think the disconnect is like when I think of someone who might have trouble saying that, I think of someone who like doesn't maybe like doesn't talk a lot, maybe has trouble like voicing their emotions in general. And because it's a musical and he has to sing, he's like, well, I can show you in this way, and I can show you in this way, and I can show you in this way. And she's like, but can't you just like say it? And he's like, no, I cannot do that. Sorry. And I just.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to fixate
So it's a
on.
weird.
Not for her, like
No.
for him to not be able to say
It's like
that.
a weird setup to me, and I mean, obviously he dies, and it's very sad. And so I don't want to like. Obviously, that'd be sad for anyone, but it's just a weird setup for a central couple where they're about to get married, I guess. I don't know. I just found it
Yeah, I
weird.
think, well, so my take on that is that that is honestly part of his, like, reason why he's a ghost, is because he, like, regrets not actually,
That's
like,
probably
being
true.
able to just say, I love you to her. And, like, when he finally accepts his ghostdom at the end, like, it's his last thing he says to Molly, I almost said Casey, to Molly, are, I love you.
Okay.
So I do think it, like, I think it's meant to set up that like closure thing,
Okay.
and I just think there are better ways that they could do that. I think that plot line is so dumb. Like the whole thing is like he literally does love her and is willing to do anything for her. Like it's not like an actual question of if that is an issue and he's just hiding something and won't say it.
Yeah.
It's that he literally just has this, he's like, I just do it in my actions
He's
instead of my
like,
words,
I'm just not
baby.
gonna say it. And I'm like, what the hell, man? You can just say it. She's like, not asking for that much. She's just like, could you please? Like, oh. And then the only other thing I wanted to say, and I texted you about this before I was listening, there were like really weird racist implications when Sam dies. Like the mugger has like a really over-exaggerated Hispanic accent, and I don't know if that's from the movie, but it just seems like something we could have changed. We didn't need to do that.
Yeah, it's definitely bizarre. I think I've always just assumed it was like the exact character from the movie, which I've never seen, but I agree. It feels like not that Isn't that, my tea is like, it's not even that you can't have like a Latin person as the mugger murderer. It's more so that it's like that, and it's like this really over exaggerated,
Yeah.
like, hey, I only do that, that, the bad, that,
Yeah, it's like they
that.
want you to
It's like,
know, like
girl,
based on just listening,
yeah.
they want you to know it's a Latino person. And I'm like, why are we doing this right now? Like, it was very strange and jarring. Yeah, we just didn't need that. But I don't know. Do you have anything else to say about Ghost?
I do, I
Okay,
do. I
great.
actually really wanna, I have a highlight, like I do think is a high point of Ghost for me, which is the character of Oda Mae. I actually think she is phenomenally done. And one interesting thing is that Ghost was pretty much universally got mixed to lower po like less positive reviews on both its original run on West End and in its Broadway run. However, both the actresses that played Oda Mae got respectively Olivier and Tony nominations. And I think that especially the Tony nomination or the Broadway performer, I think she has a really cool story. So her name's Davine Joy Randolph. I don't know if it's Davine or Divine. Really cool story. So she originally auditioned to be the understudy, but got cast as the lead. For the Broadway production, and this is like her first like major role of anything. And so she was started to learn like started rehearsals to learn the role for Broadway. And when that happened, the UK Oda Mae, I think her name is Cheryl Clark maybe. She had an injury. And so Davine Divine, I really wish I had looked up the pronunciation of her name. She came to West End with like a week notice, learned the show and took over the role on West
Wow.
End, and then came back and did it as her Broadway debut and was nominated for a Tony for
That's
it. And
awesome.
then this was like her only Broadway show she ever did, and then moved into to TV and film, and has had some like pretty notable roles. Most recently she was in the Dolomite, what was it?
Dolomite
Dolomite
is my
something movie with
name.
like, yeah, so she was like she won a lot of awards for her performance in that. Not an Oscar, but
Oh,
like
she's
a
in
few
High
others.
Fidelity, the TV
Yeah, and then
show.
she's in High
Yes, I
Fidelity right
love
now.
her. Oh my gosh. Wow, I had no
So I just
idea.
thought that was a cool story.
Oh, that's
And I really like
awesome.
her character and her voice.
Oh, wow. Well, props to her. That's amazing. She's so funny in High Fidelity. I was very upset when that show got canceled.
I've never seen High
It's a great
Fidelity.
show. You should watch it.
Okay, I will.
All right. Well, I don't have much else to say. I think my
I
just like biggest
don't
thing
either.
is
I also am like, I think we've been cutting, I we think we started season two with a lot of thoughts, which isn't bad, but we're starting to shorten our episodes a little
hey, gotta
bit.
keep it tight. You know, I think that's
Yeah.
the advice my mom gave me when she listens. So, should we move on to recreates?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, perfect. So, mine is pretty simple this week. It won't take very long. Keep it right, keep it tight. But so, like I said, I feel like Sondheim is usually kind of paired up with Andrew Lloyd Webber as like the opposite. You know, like Sondheim creates like really rich characters, and it's not maybe the most like melodious thing in the world, but it's really intricate, and you really get into someone's psyche. Whereas Andrew Lloyd Webber is like, beautiful music, sing, my angel, you know?
Yeah.
So I decided I was just gonna like make Phantom, but use Sondheim songs in place of the Phantom songs. So basically, I just went through the track list. I didn't do everything because there's like a shit ton of filler in Phantom of the Opera, so I didn't do like
There
the
really is.
note or whatever. And I just replaced them with Sondheim's songs from various shows. I'm gonna start with Think of Me Fondly. And if this were a Sondheim show, that song would be more something on the lines of Losing My Mind from Follies. You know, I dim the lights, I think about you. I
Yeah.
kind of just took like the thinking motif there. Then we got Angel of Music, which is the song where Christine and her friend kind of talk about some shit, and her friend's like, Christine, why are you so good now? And Christine's like, I got this weird teacher. And in the Sondheim show, I think that song would be something more akin to A Very Nice Prince from Into the Woods, like kind of an interlude-y song, but two women kind of dishing about this guy that maybe one of them's not so sure about, but the other one is sure about. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Mirror is kind of the song where it's really cool, actually, the Royal Albert Hall version. Like, he shows up, like, right behind her. His head is huge, and she's super huge in the mirror. It actually looks pretty cool. Grandiosity again. But The Mirror is kind of the song where the Phantom appears. It's right after Raoul leaves, and he's like, who the fuck is this guy? And it's kind of compelling her to come with him. And I figured that kind of reminded me of The Witch in Into the Woods singing Stay With Me to Rapunzel. Obviously a very different context, but it'd be a song of that ilk. And then The Phantom of the Opera. So that's a song where the Phantom basically takes Christine down to his lair and is like, yes, like, I'm compelling you, sing, my angel, I'm gonna get what I want. And I decided I would, in the Sondheim show, that would be sooner or later I always get my man, woman, from Dick Tracy. And that song is very, like, kind of jazzy, and it's just kind of like, baby, you're mine on a platter, I always get my man, which is kind of the vibe I'm getting from the Phantom in that moment, so... And then next we've got The Music of the Night, and I figured that would be... Why are you laughing? Sorry. That was funny.
I was laughing at that. I can get my man.
Yeah, that's kind of the confidence he's got in that moment. So next we've got Music of the Night, and for this one I thought Joanna from Sweeney Todd could fit really nicely in here. Just kind of a lamenting, beautiful love song. For Prima Donna, I couldn't decide. I think you could go in the Sondheim version of Phantom of the Opera. You could go really depressing and kind of go every day a little deaf, like Carlotta singing or sitting there and like kind of thinking about her relationship to her fans rather than her relationship to a man, which is what every day a little deaf is. But maybe go a little darker there. Or you could still go dark, but just a little more upbeat and go everything's coming up roses. And then for Poor Fool, He Makes Me Laugh, I just went with You Could Drive a Person Crazy. I thought that would be fun. All I Ask of You, which is the duet between Raoul and Christine, I went with Tonight from West Side Story. You know, your typical lovey-dovey duet.
Mm-hmm. Rachel Ziegler. Mm-hmm.
Can't wait for that. And then for the All I Ask of You, Reprise, which is sung by the Phantom, and he's kind of like, what the fuck? How could you leave me? I went with Finishing the Hat from Sunday in the Park with George, because it is kind of what the fuck, how could you leave me, and also kind of about art, which the Phantom is all about music, so. For Masquerade, I also went with something from Sunday. I went with Putting It Together, mostly because it's, like, upbeat, and I was like, it's kind of a party song, like it's sung during a party, so I thought that'd be fun. Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again, which is the song Christine sings at her father's grave. Her father is dead, by the way. I went with Cinderella at the Grave, quick and easy, from Into the Woods. Point of No Return, which is sung by Christine in the Phantom, although, like, for most of the song, she doesn't know it's him. He basically, like, sneaks into the opera that they're putting on, and she thinks it's another actor, and then she realizes it's the Phantom in disguise. I went with Last Midnight from Into the Woods. Because it's kind of
like
spooky, and also like it's your last chance is kind of
have another bean.
Let's have another bean, our theme, our slogan, I guess, which is also our couple name. Sorry. So
wow.
Then for the finale, I combined a bunch of songs together because the finale is like 10 minutes long. And I still know every word, which is hilarious. I used to, like, act that out in my room when I was a kid. Okay. Kind of dark. But I went with Marry Me a Little, because he asked her to marry him. Being Alive, because he's, like, begging for someone to love him. And then maybe Everything's Coming Up Roses here instead, because he's just kind of like, fuck it, I'm out.
Yeah.
He goes out. So
those are like the alternate endings.
Yeah. So I figured that would kind of be like the Sondheim song insertion for Phantom of the Opera.
Wow. I want to see the Sondheim super
Me
show.
Me too. Steven, make it happen.
Yeah. Okay. My recreate is kind of interesting.
Okay.
It's not really related to ghosts at all. So the vibe is kind of similar to my Star Kid recreate where I came up with like the follow-up. And it's basically a different ghost type musical for the spooky ooky week. And I thought of doing something that was kind of like a combination of ghost and phantom a little bit. And so the concept is La Llorona, the
Oh my
musical.
God.
So,
Okay. Oh my God.
so if you don't know, La Llorona is a Latin American folk story. About it's kind of like a story that you tell kids to keep them from being naughty and to have them behave well. It was told to me by my Honduran mother growing up and still scares the absolute fucking shit out of me. Thanks, Juanita, for that. But the story is about this woman who is a ghost and roams the water, like basically any waterfront, lakes or rivers, with this like melodic moaning. And her whole thing is that she like lures in children and drowns them. So the concept is this, I'm thinking like a Cruella style movie for La Llorona, or musical in this case. So the vibe is like she is evil, like we're not denying that, but we're getting her backstory and making her a more complex and nuanced villain. So a little bit about the backstory of La Llorona, like the story. So there's like a deeper like lore than the original like or than the more common folk story that's told now. In the original lore, it's about a beautiful woman named Maria who marries a rich conquistador, and they have two kids together. And he cheats on her with another woman, and in a blind fit of rage, she drowns both of her children in the river, and then is consumed by guilt. And drowns herself as well. Instead of like entering the afterlife at ghost themes, she enters like this purgatory state and roams the earth looking for her children that she drowned, and also drowning naughty Latino kids along the way that don't listen to their mothers and roam farther than they should. So in the retelling, I didn't actually like. I basically I'm just coming up with some concepts, but the vibe of this is just like we should make something like this. But I would want this to just be like, what is her side of the story? Like, okay, husband cheats on you, but like I think that we can give her, not that I want her to like go through more, I mean, maybe I do. I don't know, she seems evil. But I think that I want her to have like a more convincing reason to kill her kids. And like obviously that's an evil act. But like, you know how sometimes you're like on the villain's side, even though they're just objectively evil,
Sure.
like you get their anger, you get their pain. That's the kind of telling of the story I want for La Llorona. So I kind of want like, so my vibe is I think the first act should end with the drowning of her children. So the whole first act is like her backstory, everything that leads up to that. And then the second act is kind of her as this ghost and like what this new ghost life means for her and how like the maybe the story is spread of her being, her entity. But I want her to have to be like a villain that like by the end of Act One, you're like rooting for her to kill the kids. So I think that the kids should be like really fucking annoying, like little pests. And the husband should be like, instead of just cheating, I think he should be like a legit awful human being, terrible person that like degrades her and it like
Lord.
yeah, like makes her. You should like hate him. Not in the same way as nine to. I was about to say in the same way as nine to five because we just talked about how he it's played for
Not
laughs. But in the
funny.
same way that you're just supposed to hate him to this to the case that like they could kill him and you'd be like yes, that kind of vibe. I think that also that La Llorona could have one just like musical thing that you could do is she could maybe have like a lullaby or some kind of like musical thing that she sings in the first act that then in the second act becomes a lot spookier and more mystical as like her moaning, looking for kids to kill. And otherwise, you could also just have a lot more like Latin inspired music in this that I think could make it fun. But yeah, that's the general premise. I think it's time for a La Llorona musical. I
Yeah.
also want to make clear that for me, I think there was a movie, like a horror movie recently in the last few years
Yeah.
that came out called La Llorona. I haven't seen it. Maybe it's good,
I've
maybe
heard
it's
it's
not, but
pretty
this is
good.
not like really.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is not like that, the musical. It's more like just about the general folklore and her backstory.
Wow. Let's go for the La Llorona musical. That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Should we preview next week, which will be a little different?
Yeah. Okay. So next week, we're going to try something new and would love to hear your feedback. But since we're about halfway through the season, we're going to take a little break from our regular programming and do a bonus episode where we will talk about a recent movie musical that has come out and kind of just in an unscripted way share our thoughts.
Yeah, three guesses which one, but I guess we'll keep that a secret. I'm so excited though. I think that'll be a good break and hopefully you guys will enjoy.
Yeah, and then we'll be back the following week with another episode that we'll tease at the end of next week's bonus episode.
All right, well, you guys can follow us on Twitter at RateDebate1 and follow us on Instagram and TikTok and wherever else at RateDebateRecreate. We should make some more TikToks. We're getting kind of flex.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list, girl.
Like but, everything else, you know. It's 10 miles
long. Yeah, pretty much.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank y'all so much. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed. Bye.
Bye.